This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
this has really been the continent that he's shown the most interest in. Certainly what Emmanuel Macron, the French president, is keen on is, first of all, security, terrorism, and supporting democracy.
That's reporter Catherine Field speaking on French President Emmanuel Macron's sixth visit to Africa. Full details coming up.
Also, the UN is appealing for $175 million to provide life-saving assistance for forgotten victims of the radical Islamic group Boko Haram. Kenya's high court has ordered the government to restore transmission for the independent broadcasters taking off the air on Tuesday.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees is appealing for $175 million to provide life-saving assistance to more than 250,000 largely forgotten victims of the radical Islamic group Boko Haram. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
The Boko Haram insurgency, which began in northeast Nigeria in 2009, has displaced more than 2 million people inside the country. It also has sent hundreds of thousands of people fleeing for their lives to neighboring Niger, Chad, and Cameroon since 2013. Nigerian military forces have recaptured much of the territory taken by Boko Haram, and their progress has largely diverted world attention away from the crisis. While it no longer makes headline news, UN refugee spokesman Baba Baloch tells Voice of America the Boko Haram insurgency continues to displace people, negatively affecting their lives.
So we're trying to remind the world that there are still hundreds and thousands of people who are displaced by it, affected by it, especially women and children. Let's not forget the whole movement is against education. So many schools are being affected, and also it has devastated impact on all the community where this group is operating.
The Lake Chad Basin is one of the poorest and most forgotten regions in the world. The UNHCR says one of the most devastating side effects of the Boko Haram conflict is the alarming rise in food insecurity, affecting more than 7.2 million people. This, it says, has sent malnutrition levels soaring. The agency says Nigerian refugees continue to flee to very remote and impoverished communities where they live in dire conditions. The appeal aims to provide emergency food, shelter, health, education, and water and sanitation to more than 200,000 Nigerian refugees and to 75,000 residents in the communities hosting them. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Kenya's High Court has ordered the government to restore transmission for the independent broadcasters taken off the air Tuesday ahead of the opposition swearing-in ceremony for its leader, Raila Odinga, as the people's president. The Interior Minister has accused the media of being complicit in an effort to subvert the elected government and spark violence. Press freedom advocates say the government has gone too far. Mohamed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
Article 19, along with other human rights groups, took the government to court to challenge its decision to suspend the three leading independent TV stations over what the Interior Ministry said was security concerns. On Thursday, the High Court ruled that the stations must be restored to air pending a full hearing in the case, according to a tweet from KTN, one of the affected broadcasters. Henry Maina heads the East Africa Office of Article 19, a global NGO that promotes freedom of expression and information worldwide. He says Kenya has never witnessed such an attack on press freedom.
This is the lowest Kenya has ever come to in the last 30 or 40 years. We've never had any media shut down by the state. We used to have challenges with newspapers being banned, but a TV or radio station has never been shut down in Kenya. So this is the lowest the country has sunk in terms of media freedom in 21st century.
The government did not immediately respond to the ruling. Kenya's Interior Minister Fred Matiang'i said Wednesday the media houses will remain shut until investigations are over.
We will bring each one of the individuals involved in legal activities to book.
His words sparked fear and outrage in the local press community. Three journalists at the National Media Group, which runs one of the suspended TV stations, told VOA they spent the night in their office building after getting word of plainclothes police officers waiting for them outside. The state accuses the media of ignoring its advice to not air the opposition swearing-in ceremony in Nairobi. The three broadcasters were all planning to go ahead with live coverage at the time they were caught. Raila Odinga, speaking for the first time after his self-inauguration, said the government is taking away the gains the country has made. He made reference to KANU, the party that ruled Kenya for decades since independence.
The attack on the media, the arbitrary arrests of individuals, intimidation of the judiciary, divide and rule tactics. KANU is back. KANU is back, the force, and by a new name that we must fight. We fought for a long time to give this country a new constitution in 2010. That new constitution, together with all the freedoms that it entails, is under serious attack right now.
Odinga has refused to accept the results of an October presidential runoff, which he boycotted. Incumbent President Uhuru Kenyatta was declared the winner. Odinga took a symbolic oath of office Tuesday as the so-called People's President. TJ Kajwang, the opposition MP who administered the oath, was brought in front of a judge Thursday, accused of treason and organising a public meeting without informing the authorities. VOA spoke to his lawyer, Nelson Harvey.
We looked at the charges, we talked to our client, we realised that he'd been tortured, he'd been moved around all over the town from one station to another station, and the intention was just to intimidate him.
On Thursday, the judge charged Kajwang with enabling Odinga to commit treason and ordered him released on bail of 50,000 Kenyan shillings, or about $500. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
French President Emmanuel Macron is on his sixth trip to Africa since taking office last May. The French president is in Tunisia for a state visit today and will head to Senegal tonight. In Dakar, he'll host the Global Partnership for Education Financing Conference with Senegal's president, Macky Sall. I spoke with reporter Catherine Field about the focus of the French president's trip to Africa.
This has really been the continent that he's shown the most interest in. Certainly what Emmanuel Macron, the French president, is keen on is, first of all, security, terrorism, and supporting democracy. And that's why this state visit to Tunisia is so important for him, because he feels that the only way that France can support democracy is by France being there, being on the ground, investing in the infrastructure, and particularly in investing in the youth. Emmanuel Macron has taken up business leaders with him, and they have already said that France will give some 50 million euros in aid specifically for young unemployed people in Tunisia. And of course, his other main emphasis, which he pushes all the time, is education and education for women. That's also high on his agenda.
What is the expected reception of him being there? Are business leaders there willing to do business with France?
Very much so. They want French investment. He has come up with this idea that France will be able to invest some 500 million euros in aid between 2020 and 22. That's very positive. He's also floating the idea that France could perhaps renegotiate the debt that Tunisia owes to France and to have that, if you like, transferred into local investments, investments that will bring jobs. The other important issue for the Tunisians is to give an image to France that tourism is actually open and up and running again. France provides you a lot of the tourist traffic into Tunisia, and with the security problems in the country over the last few years, it really has started to bite into the Tunisian economy. So certainly, you're giving the idea that Tunisia is open, the tourism industry is back up there again, and that security has been reestablished. That is essentially what the Tunisian business people want.
Will there be any focus on migration and the migrant crisis?
Indeed, this is another aspect of pretty much everywhere that Emmanuel Macron goes nowadays, whether it be in Africa or around Europe, the migrant crisis. Let's not forget that Tunisia is not far by boat to Lampedusa, this Italian island in the middle of the Mediterranean. It's only a few hours away. So you get that pull, not just from young Tunisians who feel they have no stake in their country, but also from people who are coming up through Africa. Of course, also looking again, Tunisia has that big border with Libya.
As he finishes up his trip in Tunisia, he'll be heading to Senegal. And what will be his purpose there?
Two specific purposes, really, in Senegal. One is he'll be attending the Global Partnership for Education. Again, this is the big thing for Emmanuel Macron. Education for everybody, including women. We heard this a couple of months ago when the president was in Burkina Faso. He was talking about the need for women to be given chances to have education. That's a big thing. Security will be key also in this part of the visit. The French would like to see more contributions from the Senegalese, particularly for security in the G5 Sahel region. From the Senegalese side, they want more help for their infrastructure, and the French have been quite keen in giving help, for example, building an airport, building an express railway there. So the two are coming together there. The other visit that France's president will make when he's in Senegal will be to the island of Saint-Louis. It's an island in Senegal that the French have had connection with since the 17th century. They feel very strongly about this island. But in particular, Emmanuel Macron is going there to look at coastal erosion and the effects of climate change. Fishing is integral to the economy of Saint-Louis. And so Emmanuel Macron wants to go there and actually have a look at particularly what effects climate change is having to this area.
That was reporter Catherine Field in Paris.
South Africa's president, Jacob Zuma, has submitted his response to allegations of corruption to the National Prosecuting Authority. VOA Southern Africa correspondent Anita Powell spoke with our colleague Kate Pound-Dawson about the corruption scandals that swirled about Zuma now in his last year as president. She says very little is known about Zuma's statement to the prosecutors.
That is the million-dollar question, and the opposition Democratic Alliance has asked Sean Abrams, that's the head of the National Prosecuting Authority, to provide us a copy, to provide a public copy of Zuma's submission. But no, at this time, we're not really sure what's inside that submission.
What are the major allegations concerning Mr. Zuma?
It's very hard to convince 783 counts of corruption into a simple explanation. But this has to do with a deal that went down in the 90s that Zuma was allegedly involved in. And it's called the Strategic Defense Package. It was finalized in 1999 by the government. And it includes allegations of large-scale bribery and corruption.
So all of the allegations are dating back to the 1990s. Are there allegations of inappropriate activity since he became president?
There certainly are different separate allegations of inappropriate activity. I think most people who have been following South African affairs will recall the Inkandla affair. And that is the allegations that the president spent some $26 million worth of taxpayer money for security upgrades on his private home in rural KwaZulu-Natal. And those upgrades, which the president said at the time were for essential security befitting a head of state, included a swimming pool, an amphitheater, and a chicken run. And they were condemned by the last anti-corruption czar of South Africa, and they've been trying to mount an investigation. That has gone in fits and starts until recently, where only very recently has it become possible for a commission of inquiry to be set up into this allegation.
What comes next in this process?
Specifically with this arms deal, the president's submission, rather, to the National Prosecuting Authority that they drop these charges. It's going to be up to the National Prosecuting Authority to decide how to proceed. They could take this seriously, or they could file Mr. Zuma's petition in the garbage can and they can proceed with prosecution. It's going to be up to them. And I believe they have 14 days to do so. So we should be hearing fairly soon what they are going to decide. But it's worth noting that the head of the National Prosecuting Authority is a gentleman named Sean Abrams, and he has been seen as being extremely close to Mr. Zuma. And some of Mr. Zuma's and Mr. Abrams' critics have said that he's let Zuma off the hook repeatedly in the past. So a lot of people are probably expecting the NPA to do what Zuma wants them to do.
Today, Parliament said that the president will go ahead and give the State of the Nation address as scheduled next week. What is expected for that speech?
This is just a summation for the South African people of how every sector of their government is going over the last year. So he's going to touch on a lot of issues like the economy, which is going to probably feature heavily. He'll talk about education. He'll talk about health. But this speech is notable because he's also probably going to, if his last speech, his last big speech is any indication, he's also probably going to pepper it with lots of hints and lots of snide jabs at his political enemies. That's what he did in December when he gave a two-hour speech in front of his ruling party, the African National Congress. And he made many jabs at the man who was chosen to be his successor in the party, Cyril Ramaphosa, who is now still the deputy president and will be the presumptive ANC presidential nominee when the party goes to the polls next year, when the country goes to the polls, rather, next year.
That was VOA correspondent Anita Powell in Johannesburg speaking with Kate Pound Dawson.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiz Wuhib, 22 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. The UN is appealing for $175 million to provide life-saving assistance for forgotten victims of the radical Islamic group Boko Haram. Kenya's High Court has ordered the government to restore transmission for the independent broadcasters taken off the air on Tuesday. And South Africa's President Jacob Zuma has submitted his response to allegations of corruption to the National Prosecuting Authority. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
A Washington-based think tank says Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi is purging potential candidates ahead of presidential elections in March. Amy Hawthorne is the deputy director of research at the Project on Middle East Democracy. She explained her concerns to VOA's Mohammed El-Shanawi.
It's remarkable. President Sisi has decided that he wants to hold an election in March to be reelected. Some dictators don't bother to hold an election, or they do what Mubarak used to do, which is hold a referendum. Yes, no, me, no one else. Sisi has decided he wants to have an election, and he said that it should be competitive and Egyptians should have choices. So lo and behold, six different candidates came forward to challenge him to run as his competitor in the election, which is allowed in the Egyptian political system since 2004. Sisi, it turns out, doesn't actually want any competition. The fact that several of these would-be candidates came from the military was even more apparently threatening to him. And so using a variety of measures and tricks and means, the Egyptian authorities have managed to either disqualify on very shaky grounds these would-be candidates, or has intimidated, threatened, and pressured them, their families, and their supporters, leading them to pull out. So to be blunt about it, what the upcoming presidential vote is turning into is a farce, because there's no competition. There's no real reason to hold the election if Sisi is so determined to hold power and to repress anyone who even comes forward. Although many analysts believe that Sisi actually might be able to win a free election because he does have support among some, you know, many Egyptians, that this sort of farcical event of having Egyptians come out and say they want him for another 4 years with no competition is a waste of time and money. So the election is turning into just a giant farce.
But he is now having the current leader of smaller Al-Ghad Revolution Party in Egypt.
Yes, well, apparently Sisi did want a token competitor after eliminating all other competitors. And by the way, some of these would-be competitors are in prison because they dared to run against Sisi. He managed to find a person who, until I believe yesterday or the day before, was actively campaigning for Sisi's re-election and on his own Facebook page had a support Sisi message. So this is someone who actually supports President Sisi. It's going to be fascinating to watch him campaign against him. This is somebody who is not well known to many Egyptians. He's an obscure political figure. But those of us who have been following Egypt for a long time remember this person as someone who Mubarak deployed in the 2000s to disrupt Ayman Nour's opposition party. So this is someone who is not in any way a credible opposition figure. In fact, many Egyptians believe he is, you know, controlled by state authorities. So this is also a bit of a farce. The problem is that authoritarian rule can work in the short run, in a very short period of time, in terms of suppressing and keeping control. And so I believe that the international community, exhausted by the past 7 years in the Middle East, exhausted by the Syrian civil war, the tumult in Libya, the chaos at one point in Egypt when Egypt was in turmoil, the international community is exhausted and is focused on short-term solutions. So we can be sure that another wave of change and popular unrest will be coming. The international community, sadly, will probably be behind the curve. And once that happens, we'll then have to react. But we are in a sad moment now that the people who really have good solutions for the future of the Arab world, in my view, are those who are being suppressed and thrown in prison. So it's a difficult time for the region.
That was Amy Hawthorne, Deputy Director of Research at the Project on Middle East Democracy. She spoke with VOA's Mohammed El-Shanawi.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wahib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Cornelius Tenner, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in, you will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.